The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Wanna take a ride? Broadcasting from the sprawling outskirts of the Florida Everglades in the intellectual wilderness of South Lauderdale, the outer regions of humanity that people move to just because it doesn't snow. This is the Nicole Sandler Show.
All right, welcome to a Tuesday, start of a brand new week here at the Nicole Sandler Show. Glad you could join us. Things are slowly getting back to normal around here. Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen have returned, so they're back and they're at their rightful perch at the helm of the broadcast. I'm back to doing my thing here. And just to give you an update on something we talked about Friday, I had asked, now, I know this is confusing for some people. If you listen to this program on the Progressive Voices Network, you hear us coming over at 5 Eastern, 2 Pacific. But I actually do the show live at 3 Eastern for a variety of reasons. Anyway, since there have been some programming scheduling changes at Progressive Voices, Randy Rhoads' show has moved so that she's on head-to-head against us. That's not good. So I put out a call Friday. I asked you if I should move the live program back to 5 Eastern, 2 Pacific, which is what time it airs on Progressive Voices, and the answer was a resounding yes. So I'm working on it. Spoke to the Progressive Voices people. They want the show to be live, so no more two-hour tape delay. I just am waiting on a special piece of equipment that they're going to be sending me so that they can pick up the live feed, so that when 5 Eastern hits, basically, they take the signal coming from my computer. So bear with us. It shouldn't be much more than another week or so. And then we'll move back to 5 Eastern. So it basically, who this affects are the people who listen to the live stream at 3 Eastern at NicoleSandler.com or watch the YouTube show live. It'll all be at 5 Eastern. I'll give you ample notice, at least, you know, I'll give you a day's notice before it happens. Give me another week or so until we can get all the equipment stuff ironed out. Hopefully everything works flawlessly and we just move. Okay? So you spoke, we listened. And that's what it's all about. Okay, today is Tuesday. Gotta laugh. We'll be here. Oh my goodness. There's, as usual, so much going on. So to get us up to speed. Oh, you know what? I didn't do our comedy bit for the day. So let's start this because we need to start the day with a laugh or three. There's a group that I tend to play their stuff every now and again. They're called the Parody Project. It's a guy named Don Caron, C-A-R-O-N. And I guess he works with a group called Freedom Toast. So this, today's comedy bit, comes courtesy of parodyproject.com and the Freedom Toast. I guess they contributed the lyrics and the audio, and Don Caron and Parody Project did the video presentation. If you're watching on YouTube, you'll see it. If you're listening to the audio podcast or an audio stream, you'll hear it, and the song is good enough. And yeah, join in, sing along. Take it away, Parody Project.
Like a child tumbling down, kicking weirdos for his cabinet until the roster got to be full now. And so only Giuliani and John Hannity have got any pull now. And he'll have fun, fun, fun till the voters take the White House away. The Defense Department says that his next project is a new force in space now. He hasn't got a notion how he's gonna pay for it and put it in place now. But he'll do a deal with China, sell them Kansas, and we all can say face now.
We all can say face.
And he'll have
fun, fun, fun till the voters take the White House. Charbiani altered the whole course of a storm.
Now he altered the storm.
And so changing maps of hurricanes has turned into the national
he
norm.
Now he altered the storm.
He sent Dorian away and he's waiting for the next one to form.
He banished the storm.
And he'll have fun, fun, fun till Melania takes a Sharpie away. Now you knew all along the pillow she's getting wise to you.
You shouldn't have lied.
And the house went Democratic, so you're thinking that your fun is all through
now. You shouldn't have lied.
But Vladimir has a dodger with some pretty girls down in Baku
now. You shouldn't have lied.
We'll have fun, fun, fun now that Washington is so far away.
A parody project. There you go. And who's the group that works with them? Freedom Toast. Fun, fun, fun. All right. We've had better. But it was okay. It was good. Hey, anything to give us a smile before we embark on the news of the day. And there's a lot of news to get to. Before we get to actually the news, I need to share with you this article I just saw that it sort of says everything you need to know about this administration. It's from the Washington Post, and the headline reads, "A British family on vacation accidentally drove into the U.S. They've spent days detained with their three-month-old baby." I couldn't make this stuff up if I tried, and I find myself saying that all the time. And they're the Connors family. Have nothing to do with the Roseanne family that's left over and having a horrible show on ABC. Anyway, it says, let me just read it to you. The Connors family didn't plan to be on the unmarked road. Originally from the UK, two couples and their three young children were driving near the US-Canada border on October 3rd during a visit to Vancouver when an animal ventured into the road, forcing them to make an unexpected detour. But before the family could get very far, flashing lights from a police car appeared in their rearview mirror. The officer that pulled them over was American. They had accidentally crossed the border. The vacationing family says this was the moment their trip turned into, quote, the scariest experience of our lives. That quote comes from a complaint filed Friday to the Inspector General of the Department of Homeland Security. I wonder if this has anything to do with the resignation of the latest acting director of DHS. But anyway, I digress. Back to the story. Instead of being allowed to return to Canada or the UK, Eileen Connors alleges that her entire family, including her three-month-old son, ended up at the Burks Family Residential Center in Leesport, Pennsylvania, where they have spent more than a week living in, quote, frigid and, quote, filthy conditions. As of late Monday, Bridget Cambria, the Connors' lawyer, told the Washington Post that the British family was still at the center waiting to be deported. This is sickening. Quote, "We will never forget. We will be traumatized for the rest of our lives by what the United States government has done to us," Connors wrote in a sworn statement, later adding, quote, "We have been treated like criminals here, stripped of our rights and lied to. It is undoubtedly the worst experience we have ever lived through." U.S. Customs and Border Protection could not be reached for comment late Monday. Officials with the U.S. Customs and U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement confirmed in a statement to the Post on Tuesday that the family is being held at the Leesport facility, but disputed their claims of mistreatment. Are you fucking kidding me? The center, the statement said, quote, "provides a safe and humane environment for families as they go through the immigration process." This is unbelievable. Officials said reports of abuse or inhumane conditions at BFRC are unequivocally false. The Connors, however, alleges that the mistreatment began shortly after her family was stopped by the American officer. Even before the tourists could explain why they were on the road, Connors, she's 24 years old, wrote that her 30-year-old husband, David, and his cousin, who was driving at the time, were arrested. They were arrested. You crossed an international border, said the officer, who allegedly did not read the men their rights and ignored the family's pleas that they had unknowingly crossed into the United States and never intended to enter the country during their trip, despite having the proper visas. So they had the proper visas. The complaint did not specify exactly where the incident took place. The family asked if they could simply turn around and were denied. Connors and her baby were separated from her husband and placed in a, quote, very cold cell at an undisclosed border patrol station in Washington State. Cambria, a lawyer with ALDEA, the People's Justice Center in Pennsylvania, told the Post that the frigid detention cells have a name, ice boxes. Lovely. So they were sent from Washington State, where they accidentally crossed over the border, to Pennsylvania, to an immigrant detention center. It gets worse the more I read. The Connorses were issued metal-like thin emergency blankets to keep warm, according to the complaint. David Connors was also given a foam cup with noodle soup to eat, but he described the meager meal as not even apt for animals. Then all they could do was wait, she wrote. The officers left us in the cell the entire day with no information, no call to our family back home, no idea when we would be free to leave, she wrote. When it came time to sleep, Connor said she refused to allow her son to, quote, lie on the disgusting floor next to her, at one point even trying to balance the infant on top of her body. We are so sickened by all of this, she wrote. The idea and memory of our little baby having to sleep on a dirty floor of a cell will haunt us forever. You think? In the morning, immigration officials told the Connorses they would be released if they could provide contact information for any family member living in the United States who could sponsor them. Luckily, a relative with U.S. citizenship agreed to help. We were ready for all this to end, Connors wrote. But hours later, they were informed that they wouldn't be leaving. There was a, quote, change in plans. And soon after, they were loaded into a van in what, quote, felt like an abduction or kidnapping, according to the statement. David Connors was dropped off at the Tacoma Northwest Detention Center, while Eileen Connors and her baby were taken to a Red Roof Inn in Seattle to spend the night. They were reunited the next morning at the Seattle airport. When Eileen Connors wrote, I thought finally we're going to go home, and I felt relieved, even though officers would not tell me where we were going or why. And then it says, but her relief was short-lived. When the Connorses got off their flight, they were in Pennsylvania. Their destination was the Burks Family Residential Center, a facility advocates have decried as baby jail, according to the Philadelphia Inquirer. Now, Kamishwari Kate in the YouTube chat room is saying, the border guards at the U.S.-Canadian border are not playing effing games. I have a U.S. passport and live in British Columbia. I would never even step foot over the border. I get that, but obviously they made a mistake. Obviously there was no fence or border crossing there, and they were able to just cross over. They said they made a mistake. They wanted to go back, and this is what happened to them? This is sickening. Okay, so now the lawyer said the arrival of the Connorses and their infant son on October 5th marked the first time in a long time that we've had a child under the age of one in this facility. The other couple who'd been traveling with the Connorses and their two-year-old twins were also transported to Burks. This is heartbreaking. I don't believe that it's suitable for children that young because newborns probably shouldn't be around 100 other kids, all of whom are coming from different parts of the world, she said, adding there were a lot of silly decisions made along the way. In this instance, when you're talking about a three-month-old, those silly decisions can be really dangerous. And the article goes on and on. Oh, on Friday, Connors wrote that her baby, quote, woke up with his left eye swollen and teary, and his skin was rough and blotchy. This is disgusting. Officials told the Connorses, told the Connors that their son was, quote, a bit young to be at the center. And if they wanted, they could sign papers allowing him to be separated from them. Oh, my God. We were shocked and disgusted at the thought of our baby being taken from us. And ever since, I cannot sleep thinking that someone might come in and take him from me, she wrote. Beyond the alleged living conditions, the Connorses also claim that they were not given an opportunity to call their embassy, instead relying on family members to reach out on their behalf. In the statement, Eileen Connors wrote that she only learned that the embassy had tried to contact her and her family while they were detained on October 7th, accusing the center staff of not passing along the message until it was too late in the day to call back. After getting in touch with the embassy, Connors wrote that her family situation started to improve. She observed staff members cleaning, and she was given a playpen and a little tub for her son. On Monday, Cambria told the Post that the Connors were hopeful they were leaving as soon as Tuesday. And I can't tell from this story if they're still there or not. Emotionally and psychologically, they're destroyed, the lawyer said. They're very upset about what's happened to them. You think? Because it doesn't make any sense. No, it doesn't. Anyone that reads their statement or hears their story will not understand how this could have possibly happened. I'll tell you how this happened. Donald Trump, Stephen Miller, Bill Barr, and all those fucking criminals occupying the White House and the cabinet and Washington, D.C. That's how this happens. This is disgusting. What are we waiting for? Why aren't we rising up and taking to the streets? This is fucked up. Heads need to roll over this. And again, I'm wondering if that's what the resignation of the latest acting DHS chief was about. Probably not. But this is America. Already, we have abandoned our allies who helped eradicate ISIS, at least temporarily, and gave and said to Turkey, open season, go shoot a Kurd or five. It's sickening. It's disgusting. When are we going to do something about it? And yes, I'm glad that the House is doing this impeachment inquiry. I'm kind of pissed that right now what they're doing are these behind closed doors depositions. In fact, I cover that in What's News. But I read part of that article before I came on the air. To be honest with you, I hadn't read the whole thing. I'm sickened by this. And what recourse do we have? Do we have to wait till November 3rd? I guess so. By the way, let me remind you now, and I'm sure I'll remind it a few more times between now and November 3rd, 2020. My birthday is November 4th. Actually, the day after the election will be my 61st. I'm going to turn 60 in 3 weeks. So make it a good birthday for me, please. Look, I had Barack Obama elected on my 49th birthday. Ronald Reagan was elected on my 21st birthday. So I had something that had to make up for that. On my 49th birthday, that's when Barack Obama was elected. And I thought, finally, the universe is making up for my 21st birthday. But no, unfortunately, Obama didn't turn out to be as good as he should have been. So now, Election Day 2020 is November 3rd. Please don't make me wake up to a November 4th where Donald Trump is still the president. Please. Please. All right. It's Tuesday. Gotta Laugh is here. There's still so much going on. Laffy will join us in a few minutes, but let me bring us up to date on what's happened over the weekend with What's News. And I'm not doing it live today. Take it away, Nicole.
I read the news today, oh boy.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
It's been exactly 3 weeks since House Democrats announced they were going to begin the process of impeaching the president. It's been 1 week since Donald Trump, on behalf of the United States, abandoned our allies, the Kurds, in Syria after giving Turkey's authoritarian leader Erdogan his blessing to invade. and Congress officially returns Tuesday after a two-week recess, while 12 of the Democratic presidential hopefuls take the debate stage again Tuesday night. All this following one of the most consequential weeks of impeachment developments, this week promises to be a doozy. A number of high-profile witnesses are scheduled to give sworn depositions behind closed doors this week, starting with Trump's former top aide on Russia, Fiona Hill, who spent upwards of 10 hours testifying on Monday. Hill reportedly told Congress that Trump's personal attorney, Rudy Giuliani, and the U.S. ambassador to the European Union, Gordon Sondland, circumvented the administration to pursue a shadow foreign policy on Ukraine. Hill reportedly raised concerns about Giuliani's efforts in Ukraine and also spoke in support of ousted U.S. ambassador to Ukraine, Marie Yovanovitch, who testified Friday. According to reports, Hill told lawmakers that after former National Security Advisor John Bolton learned about Giuliani's efforts to get Ukraine's government to investigate Trump's political opponents, that Bolton told Hill that he wanted no part of Giuliani's and acting White House Chief of Staff Mick Mulvaney's, quote, drug deal. Yes, he called it a drug deal. Bolton told Hill to report the situation to the top lawyer at the National Security Council. That would be John Eisenberg. Bolton also referred to Giuliani as a, quote, hand grenade. Hill told lawmakers she considered what was happening to be a clear counterintelligence risk to the United States. And the depositions continue. On Tuesday, George Kent, a Ukraine expert at the State Department, is expected to testify. Tuesday's also the deadline for Giuliani, Defense Secretary Mark Esper, Acting OMB Director Vaught, and the Office of Vice President Mike Pence to all turn over documents that have been subpoenaed. On Wednesday, former Mike Pompeo advisor Michael McKinley, who just resigned from the State Department last week, is set to be in the hot seat. On Thursday, it's the long-awaited deposition of the U.S. ambassador to the European Union, Gordon Sondland. And on Friday, Laura Cooper, a defense official who works on Ukraine, is scheduled to be deposed. Friday's also the deadline for Acting Chief of Staff Mick Mulvaney and Energy Secretary Rick Perry to turn over documents that have been subpoenaed. Stay tuned. Now, if you're like me, you're asking, why is all this testimony happening behind closed doors? Well, on Monday night, Chris Hayes asked the same of Congressman Denny Heck, who was in the room for Fiona Hill's deposition.
Why are these being done as closed-door depositions?
Because they're depositions, right? We're conducting this to the highest standards and the best practices of investigations. We're not in the public hearing portion of this yet. We'll get there. But what we don't want is for all of the witnesses, some of whom will be hostile, to coordinate with one another, because that will impede us in our effort to get to the complete truth. And I think that's what the American public wants. Obviously, they're going to want to know all this information at some point. But for the time being, what they want us to do is get to the truth.
Okay, but don't take too long. We need those hearings televised. Meanwhile, the situation for the Kurds we abandoned in northeast Syria last week is getting more dire by the minute. The New York Times reporting, quote, Syrian government forces streamed into the country's northeast on Monday, seizing towns where they had not set foot in years and filling a vacuum opened up by President Trump's decision to abandon the United States' Syrian Kurdish allies. Less than a week after Turkey launched that incursion into northern Syria with Trump's apparent approval, President Bashar al-Assad of Syria, considered a war criminal by the U.S., struck a deal with our former allies, the Kurds, putting them now in cooperation with not only the government of Syria, but the Russians, too. In typical Trump fashion, he created a crisis, then tries swooping in to save the day with a fix to his manufactured catastrophe. On Monday night, in a letter to Congress, Trump issued an executive order declaring a national emergency due to the situation in and in relation to Syria, and in particular, the recent actions by the government of Turkey to conduct a military offensive into northeast Syria. The Washington Post reporting, quote, the Trump administration called on Turkish President Erdogan to implement an immediate ceasefire in northern Syria and impose sanctions against Turkey on Monday in response to its military aggression. Nancy Pelosi said of the president's plan to sanction Turkey, quote, President Trump has unleashed an escalation of chaos and insecurity in Syria. His announcement of a package of sanctions against Turkey falls very short of reversing that humanitarian disaster. The Washington Post reiterates, Donald Trump gave Turkey the green light to attack our Kurdish partners, betraying the thousands of fighters who gave their lives to keep the world safe from the barbarism of ISIS. His erratic decision-making is threatening lives, risking regional security, and undermining America's credibility in the world. Pelosi noted that the House will vote on a bipartisan package to disapprove of Trump's decision this week. The Senate is also expected to vote on the joint resolution. And that's just a bit of what's news for now. I'm Nicole Sandler. If you appreciate these reports and the Nicole Sandler Show, I hope you'll consider making a contribution. My work is 100% listener-supported, and I can't do it without your help. Find out more at NicoleSandler.com. Please click on that donate button.
And now, it's time for the Nicole Sandler Show segment, Shooting the Shit with Laffy.
Yes, I know. It seems like she was just here, but, you know, whatever. Every Tuesday, we get together with Gotta Laugh, and as the man said, we shoot the shit about the news, and my God, there's a lot of shit thrown against the wall to talk about. First, we got to get her on the line, so let me push some buttons. Hello?
Well, yes, you've reached the wish list hotline.
Oh, cool. I have a wish list.
Oh, well, maybe you'll coincide with the ones I'm going to tell you.
We'll
press one if you wish. Trump's dad had pulled out as suddenly as Trump has pulled out of Syria.
The rhythm method.
Yeah. Press two if you wish that Mitch McConnell would obstruct Mike Pence's pious sycophantic gaze.
Yeah.
Press three if you wish that Trump would be sent away to Rikers and forced to share a cell with Giuliani's teeth.
Maybe they can team up with Biden's teeth.
You know who else has it? His son.
He does. Hunter has the same teeth. Biden's, of course, are manufactured. I think those are Hunter's real teeth.
They're very white and very straight and very close.
Well, Hunter's aren't so straight. No, it looks like he's just got a few extra teeth in his mouth. You know, sort of like Freddie Mercury did. I'm surprised he doesn't
Well,
sing.
When I was watching him talk, it looked like piano keys. So
yeah,
well,
it does.
What do I
but
know?
But you know what? You know what occurred to me watching Joe Biden in the last debate, and watch as you're watching tonight. It's always good to have, you know, other things sort of, you know, that's why all the debate drinking games are so much fun, because it gives you something to concentrate other than the words coming out of the candidates' mouths. With Joe Biden, watch him, because his face is stretched so tight because of the facelifts he's had, and the teeth are so this. Remember the Jim Carrey character from In Living Color? I think it was Fire Marshal Bill or something.
Oh, yes.
Joe Biden, I'm telling you. Fire Marshal Bill.
Perfect. And he's still living in that era, too.
Oh, yes, he is. Oh.
Okay, so this just came over my alerts. Trump administration issues plan to lift limits on logging in the largest intact temperate rainforest in North America.
Oh, my God.
God damn him. In Alaska, this is. You know,
of course.
He's been threatening to do that.
Of course.
He can just go
is.
Fuck himself. Anyway, you want.
Wait,
I'm
hold on.
So,
before you. Two things before we go. So tonight is the thing. I need a couple of announcements I need to make. I did mention at the top of the show, but some people were late, arrivers. Friday, we talked about moving the program. The live program to 5 Eastern. That's going to happen. Give me a week or two because I need to get special equipment to go live on Progressive Voices, but that will happen. So, you know, hold that thought. The other thing is there's a new a group that just launched a new they're trying to do like a progressive, or they're calling it Democratic media outlet. It's DemcastUSA.com. And part of it, they have people from all states writing, contributing content, and they have a what they're calling a podcast network. And basically, they're assembling a bunch of progressive-leaning shows. So it's just another outlet on which you can find, you know, shows that you might want to hear. It's DemcastUSA.com, and you can click on the Demcast Podcast Network, and you'll find us among the offerings there. So I wanted to give them a plug.
Do you know who's behind it?
No, it's a group of people that just launched this not too long ago. Again, check it, DemcastUSA.com. And they're trying to do something interesting here. And it just, you know, opening it up, you've got to be approved for them to carry your show. But trying to make it sort of a like a clearinghouse where everybody.
That's great.
Yeah. So
yeah.
We need things like this. I just saw something on Twitter that's so typical where it said, let's see if I can find it. Sherry Redstone, you know, who they own Viacom, used to own CBS, mm-hmm. apparently is looking into. Did I like it? Did I save that tweet? I should have. I guess I didn't. They're looking. Oh, here it is. Sherry Redstone and Viacom CBS are exploring to launch a conservative cable news competitor to Fox News. Are you kidding me? And Ian Millhiser, who I don't know if he's still at Think Progress or not, but he tweeted that.
I think he's at Vox or something.
Oh, good.
Now, isn't he?
Oh, good. I hope. He just tweeted, I'm going to just toss this out there, but maybe someone should consider launching a liberal cable news station during a period when there's an unpopular Republican president and a highly engaged opposition to that president. Just a thought.
You think?
Just a thought. Yeah.
Jesus Christ. Yeah. I can't. I thought you were going to surprise me and say something like, you know.
No, baby. These are tiny little baby steps.
Oh, my God. Yeah. All right. Yeah. Okay. Let's launch the birds.
Okay. Oh, hold on. Let loose the birdies.
Welcome to my tweet spot.
Okay. I know the Twitters have been a Twittering. Yeah.
They've been tweeting their buns off over here. Okay. So, Schooley, I got to meet Schooley.
Oh, really? That's at the Rachel Maddow thing?
Yeah, the Maddow thing. I can't remember. Oh, he tweeted, I'm here too, or something. And I went, where? What? Where? Uh-huh. And he was trying to, well, turns out he was in the same row I was, only across the aisle. And I said, oh my God. And I got to meet him, and he's very nice, and he's awfully cute. So, Schooley, you're awfully cute. All right. So Schooley tweeted, for this Democratic debate tonight, the candidates should just take turns reading the past 2 weeks' breaking news stories about the absurd corruption and incompetence in the White House and finish up with, come on, any of us, really.
Yeah, absolutely. That would work.
I think that would be such a cool idea because, you know, I know people at this point, I mean, I keep seeing tweets like, I'm not going to watch the debate tonight. Wait till it gets down to three, you know.
Yeah, you know. Come on.
What?
I said, come on.
I know. But if that's the case, if people are tuning out, then why not have them? This would be such a fun idea. Uh-huh. And everybody would start saying, hey, are you watching the debate? Do you know what they're doing? They're talking about all the corruption. Let's get turn it on.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, uh-huh. I wish they would do that. That's
yeah, that would be good. There's a lot of things I want to see them do. I want to see. Yeah. I still want my idea that when you, if you, sorry, I've lost my train of thought. When you lose, we need audience participation here, like they do, I guess, on Dancing with the Stars and The Voice and American and those kind of shows. And at the end of the show, whoever loses, the trap door beneath them opens and they fall through the floor, never to be heard from again.
I want to do it.
I fantasize about that at every debate.
Only if you have a camera at the landing spot.
Oh, that would be fun.
I love that idea. Uh-huh. Okay, so I think you might have retweeted this. Carolyn Orr, RVA Wonk, she's a behavioral scientist. I didn't realize that. Uh-huh. Anywho, she tweeted this. New Democratic Senator Richard Blumenthal just said at a press conference that he's planning to introduce legislation that would make threats and attacks against news organizations a federal crime.
Yes.
Blumenthal, I just love this. Blumenthal, uh-huh. quote, it is a priority for me to protect news gathering operations, no matter what their form, and the act that we're proposing would establish a federal crime when someone threatens or attacks anyone doing fact gathering or news operations. That is the purpose of this bill. Well, good.
Yes.
It won't pass.
And of course not. But that is spurred on by that video that was shown at Doral, not too far from here, Trump's golf course, where there was some Trump-affiliated PAC fundraiser event at which Don Jr. attended, Sarah B.S. Sanders attended,
Huckabee S.
You know, a lot of, you know, people from the administration were there. So it was a sanctioned event at a Trump property. And this video was shown. I felt like I had to watch it to know what the hell it is. And I was disgusted. And I know it's made up of like memes and stuff. It's horrendous. And when I think about what they did, how they annihilated Kathy Griffin because she simply held a bloodied, you know, makeshift head of Donald Trump. When I think about, you know, how they just ridicule, how they excoriate Democrats who'd say the slightest thing, slightly, you know, slightly offensive, perhaps in someone's mind. And this thing, this showed a church, Trump walking down a church, executing media outlets and people
walking behind him.
Oh, I don't even know. I was just so disgusted. It's so offensive on every level. And of course, Donald Trump still has not said a word about it.
No.
His mouthpiece, who I've never heard speak, by the way, the new Huckabee S, I don't know her name. She tweeted out something. Well, the president hasn't seen it yet, but based on what he's heard, he's very much opposed.
Oh,
this is bullshit. He tweeted out something urging people to vote for Sean Spicer on Dancing with the Fucking Stars.
Right.
And he can't bring himself to comment on this video that shows him killing his political opponents and media figures.
What do you think he'd say? Come on.
Well, he'd lie. He lies about right. He's not going to say anything. He'll probably, because he doesn't know he doesn't know how to keep his mouth shut. He'd probably say, "Well, there's nothing wrong with it. I thought it was a perfect video. It was a perfect video. What are you talking about? It was perfect."
He'd come out with the usual that he does every time something like this happens, and say something very vague like, "I in no way condone violence," which he does because he incites it all the time.
Every day,
you know, he wouldn't say anything specific about the video, but he would come out with some generic, you know, condemnation of violence.
Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, you know, he's in his bathroom getting all excited, looking at it over and over again. Oh, God, how did I say that out loud? That's sickening. Okay, so Megan Casella, who is with Politico, she tweeted out something that you and I kind of liked. Peter Navarro, Trump's trade advisor. I can hear you laughing in your head.
Yeah.
Trump's trade advisor and chief cheerleader of his China policy has apparently been quoting staunch China hawk Ron Vara in his books for years, but... One, Ron Vara is an anagram of Navarro.
Oh,
two,
my God. Oh,
Ron
my
Vara
God.
Doesn't exist. It's in his imaginary friend.
Oh,
and
my
it says,
God.
Those who know, this is from an excerpt from the article. Those who, here, I have my own excerpts. What does Peter Navarro have to say about his imaginary friend? I emailed the White House press office and received a phone call from Navarro. While he declined to speak on the record, he did send a statement in which he called Ron Vara a, quote, whimsical device and pen name I've used throughout the years for opinions and purely entertainment value, not a source of fact. He compared the Ron Vara character to, how dare he, Alfred Hitchcock appearing briefly in cameo in his movies, and wrote that it's refreshing that somebody inside joke that has been hiding in plain sight for years.
The inside joke
doesn't strike Morris Suzuki as particularly funny. Maybe she said Vara began as a whimsical device, though even that's questionable in books that purport to be nonfiction. But, quote, once he started to be used as a source of fear and loathing about China and of messages which readers are likely to believe about the dangers of various Chinese products, the joke wore very thin, she said. She was left, quote, wondering whether there might be other invented sources in Navarro's work.
You think?
So there's that.
You know who it? You know what it reminds me of? Not the Hitchcock at all. He wishes. What was the name that Trump used to use when he pretended to be his own PR flack?
John something.
I think it was John Miller.
Was it John Miller?
Like that. And he would call newspaper people.
John Barron.
Right. That's where he got his son's name. Barron. He would pretend to be a guy named John Barron. And it was obviously him trying to plant items in like New York Post Page Six and things like that about himself. And
he'd call into talk shows trying to disguise his voice, which is impossible to do.
Yes. But this guy, Peter Navarro, he is the guy negotiating these trade deals. And oh my God. And he's talking, he writes his imaginary friend all the time.
It's so embarrassing. Oh, by the way, this also is crossing all the wires. Giuliani says he will not comply with the congressional subpoena. And meanwhile, his lawyer, John Sale, who was a reputable lawyer, he quit.
Yes. I saw that. And yeah, Giuliani, okay, so I got the same alert just a few minutes ago, right as we were hitting the air, an alert from all the news outlets. Here it is. Giuliani says he won't comply with subpoenas from Democrats. Fine. Put into service, however you say it, inherent contempt. Arrest him and fine his ass. Do both. They can do both.
Oh, I wish somebody would just do that already. So overdue. I mean, so overdue.
And Rudy's the perfect person to make an example of.
Yes, oh, God, he sure would be. In fact, let's see if I can find some tweets about this. John Sale. Here's Peter Navarro again. Is parting ways. He said that John Sale basically he had done his job. He was supposed to just be doing. People close to Giuliani are advising him to hire a criminal lawyer. This is from Shimon Pro. Linger after two of his associates were indicted. And Empty Wheel says it'll make Rudy's perp walk much more dramatic if he doesn't have a criminal defense attorney to negotiate it for.
Oh my God, he's just a disaster waiting to happen. And what's interesting is over the weekend I saw a few interviews with people. Look, I remember when he was U.S. attorney in New York, when I was just a youngin out of college. I worked at WMCA in New York City, a talk station. Worked with a very right-wing host, Bob Grant, and Giuliani used to come on all the time, but he was like a respected law enforcement, you know, a prosecutor. And to see how far he's fallen is just kind of, I thought he was a slime ball then, but he was at least respected then, and now he's a punchline.
And now his own place of work is going to be the one going
that
after
takes
him.
Takes him down, which I just love. Hey, by the way, you know, tonight is the debate. There are going to be 12 candidates on stage. That's not going to be a clusterfuck or anything. but there are still, we forget about them. Just because they didn't make the old, you know, they didn't make the polling, there are still a number of people. I get emails from Joe Sestak. He's still running, allegedly.
Oh, my God. Right? I hate him. Yeah,
John Delaney. Bennett, names, I see their faces, but I can't even think what their names are. And a guy who hasn't made a single one of the debates, but he hasn't withdrawn yet either, Wayne Messam. Do you recall hearing about Wayne Messam?
Yeah,
Wayne Messam is the mayor of Miramar, Florida. It's about two towns over from me. By the way, Miramar, Florida has a larger population than South Bend, Indiana, which is where Mayor Pete mayors at. Just in case anyone was wondering. So Wayne Messam reported his quarter three fundraising. He raised $5.
I was going to say $1.50. My God, I'm surprised it was that.
He raised $5 in the third quarter and spent zero. And he allegedly has $31,000 on hand. I want to know what he's going to do with that money. So he raised $5. There's that.
Well, they better watch out. He's a real competitor.
And to those people who keep saying, you know, Mayor Pete, I remind you, Miramar, Florida has a larger population than South Bend, Indiana, just in case you were wondering.
Wowzies. Well, I don't know what these people are still in it for because they're just, you know, spending money or not spending money and wasting their time. But okay, that's fine.
Yep.
They don't have to be on stage, which is fine with me. I wish it was down to five already.
You and me both. You know what? For once, I actually think the Republicans did it right. They had the kiddie table debate.
Yeah.
And the Democrats, of course, had to do it fairly. And so they had the big drawings, you know, random drawings. And that's why we had Sanders on one night and Warren on another and, you know, never the twain shall meet. Well, now they're just throwing them all out there. I think they should have the kiddie table debate. That'll make the low tier ones drop out because no one's going to watch them.
No one's going to watch it. Yeah. I wish they would, too, then. Anywho, here's one from Manu Raju. Of what is he, CNN?
CNN,
you remember this. Matt Gaetz emerges from closed-door interview with Fiona Hill saying he was kicked out by House Democrats.
Yeah, because he had no reason to be there. He's not on any of the committees.
Let me go through.
Sorry.
Because he's not a member of three committees conducting the interview. He said he consulted with the House parliamentarian who ruled, that he could not be there. And then Kurt Bardella of creator of Country
somewhere.
Music Email, Morning Hangover contributor. Anyway, he says Trey Gowdy kicked fellow GOPer Daryl Issa out of a Benghazi committee deposition because Issa wasn't a member of the select committee.
Uh-huh. No, so he doesn't belong there. He does not belong there.
No, he's...
I see why we got Wayne Messam's numbers today. Today is FEC filing day. So Joe Sestak just released his numbers, and actually he did better than Wayne Messam. He raised $374,000 and spent $169,000 in quarter three. And he allegedly has $204,000 on hand. I don't know how, because nobody has ever seen him.
But he knows he's there.
Yeah. But I get his emails. I do get his emails. So there's that.
I never liked him. He's just a holier than thou.
I did not like him. I just, you know.
And plus, didn't he pull a fast one during the ACA discussions
and
stuff?
No, I think Sestak was okay. He's an admiral.
He was okay.
Yeah, he was all right. He's just he's not going anywhere, and these people need to get the fuck out of the race.
Yeah. All right. Anyway, Caroline RVA Wong said, after years of working closely with U.S. and learning our tactics, this is a really good point, getting briefed on our intel, knowing the IDs of informants, etc., the Kurds have been forced into the hands of our enemies. Russia knows the Kurds have knowledge and intel that they would love to get their hands on. The Kurds also have info relevant to NATO operations and tactics. Now that they've been forced into Russia's hands, they'll be forced to give up intel that will endanger U.S. and NATO operations, informants, intel gathering, etc. And to be clear, this falls on Trump, not the Kurds. Trump's actions in Syria, like so many of his actions as POTUS, will severely hurt the ability of the United States and our remaining allies to gather and use intelligence that may be vital to national security. And like we've seen so many times before, Russia stands to benefit the most.
Of course, they already are. This plays right into Vladdy's little hands.
I've never heard anybody bring up that, yes, our information will fall into the wrong hands.
Right.
That's a really good
point. Well, not only that, I mean, we have nukes sitting with the Turks.
That's coming up.
Yeah.
I really want to get into that. In fact, I was saving it till a little here. I'll read it now since I jumped the gun. No, I'm glad you did. Josh Rogan tweeted, over the weekend, state and energy department officials were quietly reviewing plans for evacuating 50 nuclear weapons that the U.S. had long stored under American control at Incirlik Air Base in Turkey. Wow, those weapons, here's the quote, those weapons, one senior official said, were now essentially Erdogan's hostages. To fly them out of Incirlik would be to mark the de facto end of Turkish-American alliance. To keep them there, though, is to perpetuate a nuclear vulnerability that should have been eliminated years ago. For his part, Erdogan claims nuclear ambitions of his own. Only a month ago, speaking to supporters, he said, he cannot accept rules that keep Turkey from possessing nuclear weapons of its own. And meanwhile, just as we've been speaking, Maddow has been tweeting about this very thing. U.S. reviewing options for pulling nuclear bombs out of Turkey. Here's how they might do it. She tweeted, with Turkey's invasion of Syria, concerns mount over nukes, on and on. She's really all over this.
Well, good. What I don't understand is Turkey is a NATO member. Doesn't NATO have some, pull here? Can't they say, cut this shit out?
Well, he's closed the roads. So they would have to, according to Maddow last night, they would have to airlift somehow this stuff because Erdogan closed all the roads. They can't remove them.
Oh my, I know our troops, the people that are still there are trapped. And we heard reports over the weekend of artillery fire hitting one convoy that had journalists, one had a medical staff. They don't give a shit who they're killing. They're just bombing haphazardly.
And they've apparently hired Al-Qaeda/ISIS people to help them.
Well, yes. And now the Kurds, because we abandoned them, the people who fought alongside our soldiers for years, who helped, not only helped, they did the heavy lifting on eradicating ISIS. They lost 11,000 members of their ranks. We lost, a couple of dozen, if that. They did the heavy lifting. We apparently, the United States reassured them 4 months ago that we're there for them. And then we desert them. And Trump's like, well, whatever. They've been fighting for centuries. They're natural enemies. No, they're not natural enemies. They're 7,000 miles away.
Right.
So it left the Kurds no choice but to form an alliance with Bashar al-Assad and the Russians. And so this is exactly what Putin wanted.
Oh, yeah. Oh, no, totally. This is, well, and which means that that's what Trump wants.
That's right. Because it allows him to totally bend over and kiss Vlad's ass. Actually, to lick it, right? You know, I'm sorry, I'm getting too graphic now.
Which, by the way, though, is treasonous. If now he's
yes.
finally
now
into
this is
and
treason.
The enemy.
This is treason, and I'm just beside myself. And again, I get angry about the fact that these hearings they're having, or their depositions, are all being done behind closed doors. I don't know if you heard the clip during What's
No,
News.
I totally did. Yeah.
Okay, so that was Congressman Denny Heck, who was in the hearing yesterday. Chris Hayes had asked him why, because I just screamed that at the television. Why are they behind closed doors? And then Chris Hayes asked the question, so he must have heard me. And he said, well, because this is a deposition, you think of it like a grand jury. We're gathering all the information. It shouldn't take much longer. Once we have it, then we turn it all over to judiciary, who then puts in does the articles of impeachment.
Right. They don't want the different witnesses influencing each other. They don't want them to let on.
Right.
So that they can't, you know,
they can coordinate their testimony.
Exactly.
Yep.
So there you go. Okay. So Digby.
Yeah.
This was okay. So, on the U.S. State Department landing page on their website, it says being a Christian leader with Pompeo in the background.
Yeah, I thought they did take it down. I know that,
they
but that was up there.
So Digby says, so two of the most powerful presidential henchmen talked up Christian values while eagerly serving the man who puts babies in cages and proudly brags that he grabs women by the pussy. Of course, that same man got an ecstatic reception at the Values Voter Conference. So what the fuck?
Ugh. God, disgusting.
It's unbelievable. Okay, Charlie Sykes, who is a never Trumper conservative, he said, let's put this in context. This is about the video.
Okay.
One, the video depicts a mass murder. Two, in a church.
In a
Three,
church.
Three, by the president of the United States.
Yep.
Four, it was made by his supporters. Five, many of whom love it. Six, it was shown at a conference of high-profile supporters. Seven, at the Trump National Doral, Miami's resort. Eight, and included the logo for Trump's reelection campaign. It's pretty much what you said, but it's all enumerated.
That's right.
Here.
It's all in one place. And there has to be consequences. Look, I was a very, what's the word? Not very strict parent. David would always try to grill into me. You need to, you know, put on consequences. If you want to stop this behavior, you need to make consequences. This man hasn't had any consequences put on him.
I know.
Just allowed to get away with all of his treasonous behavior, all of his illegal, corrupt behavior. Something's got to give. Something's got to happen,
it better happen soon.
It's
exploding, don't you?
Yep.
Don't you
just... It's a pressure cooker getting ready to blow.
It's going to blow. Okay, so Empty Wheel, she says, I think folks are going too far in saying that Fiona Hill's testimony makes Bolton look responsible. He didn't call the FBI. He told her to go leave a paper trail, making it clear he didn't approve of the crime. And rather than coming forward, he is floated writing a book. So she goes, I mean, sure, Hill's testimony will force him to shit or get off the pot, but he didn't prevent Trump from selling out Ukrainian security for campaign gain.
No.
Just to, you know, put things in perspective.
Right, but when you read the accounts that were published this weekend, it's like my original thought was, this is too surreal. Who ever thought that John Bolton would be the voice of reason within the administration?
Oh my God, who I never wanted to agree with him about anything. But I find myself supporting this little tiny slice of what he's done.
It is opposite world.
Everything you thought you knew, you never knew it all. Sideways is straight ahead. Facts no longer matter. Nope. Reality is now fiction. There's a signpost up ahead. Your next stop, opposite world.
You know, and when I first started talking about opposite world, how many years ago was that?
It was nothing
compared to what we're living in now. We have gone through the looking glass. We are totally in, you know, in I'm trying to think of an Alice in Wonderland character name territory. We may as well all be tripping.
We've been kaleidoscoped. Okay, so manufacturing, according to the LA Times, is now officially in recession despite Trump's vow to boost the industry.
Okay.
To boost industry, not the industry. There are several industries he was trying to... Okay. So Mrs. Moscow Mitch has some splaining to do.
Yes, she does.
According to Kyle Griffin of, what is he? He is a producer on MSNBC. Uh-huh. Okay, he said a senior House Democrat has asked the Transportation Department's internal watchdog to investigate whether Transportation Secretary Elaine Chao showed undue favoritism to Kentucky constituents of her husband, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, Moscow Mitch. So she's finally getting a look-see. Here's one of my favorites. This is a Ross story. One of the, they do these things where they, you know, as you know and I know, they post tweets that they like.
Okay.
Kind of like what I do.
Yeah.
Okay. And they said RNC chairwoman raked over the coals for being accusing, I'm sorry, for accusing others of nepotism,
right,
despite being like, Mitt Romney's niece.
Romney.
Right?
Hello. Romney. Ronna Romney McDaniels. I mean, she, it's it, really because she uses the Romney in her name, not that she expects to get any special treatment out of it or anything.
Right. And so just today, Kevin Cruz says, Kevin Cruz is an historian. He says, just today, I've seen Trump's son, Ron Paul's son, and Mitt Romney's niece speak out forcefully about how bad it is to use family connections to advance your career. So let me read a couple of the tweets that she got in response.
Cool.
Here's her tweet.
All right.
Ronna McDaniel, Romney, chairwoman, whatever.
Ronna Romney McDaniel or whatever.
Yeah,
it is.
I don't care what order it's in. What the hell? Uh-huh. Let me get this straight, she says. Hunter Biden got $50,000 a month from a Ukrainian energy company despite having zero experience in energy.
Yeah.
His justification? That he was also on the board of Amtrak. More obvious nepotism. If that's not the swamp, I don't know what is. All right, here's some answers. Holly R., at Holly R., isn't your name Romney? Byron Sebastian says, now do Ivanka and Don Jr.
Yes, exactly.
And then Leah McElrath says, Ivanka and Jared made $82 million last year. And then Greg O'Lear, a follower of mine, says, if you're going to worry about a Hunter, make it Duncan, your congressman who was under all those indictments.
No kidding. Right. Yep.
And then somebody else says, okay, Ronna Romney, with laughing face. And then finally, Uncle Mitt says hello.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Touche. Touche, my friends, touche. Yeah, I'm sorry. Jared and Ivanka made $82 million last year while working in the White House, taking no salary. That's what their defenders say, but they're not taking a salary. I don't give a fuck. They don't belong in there. This New York Times story over the weekend talked about when Trump makes calls with foreign leaders, occasionally he'll just say, here, say hi to Ivanka, and he'll hand her the phone. Are you fucking kidding me?
I saw that exact story. I was like, okay, you just took over the White House.
Yeah.
Ivanka, you're fine. You're just President Ivanka now. Daddy, can you just hand me the phone? You're starting to sound stupid again, and I think they'll listen to me. I'll give you a massage later. Okay, so
you're a bad man. You're a very bad man.
Just had to get that.
Okay, so Trump put out a yelling tweet.
He did.
In all caps. Oh. Just out.
Uh-huh.
Median household income is at the highest point ever, ever, ever.
Ooh.
That's how he wrote it. Okay. How about saying it this way? In the history of our country. Also, more people working today in the USA than at any time in history. Tough numbers for the radical left Democrats to beat. Impeach the president. Okay, so he just said to impeach himself. But other than that, Catherine Rampell said, one, presidents don't control the economy.
Mm-hmm.
Two, even if they did, median household income has been growing since Obama's second term.
Yes.
In fact, it has slowed slightly in recent years. Three, there are more people working today primarily because there are more people alive today.
Uh-huh.
Wah, wah, wah.
Mm-hmm.
And,
okay, Danny.
Here's something I tweeted, just so I'll end with, because I see we're getting short on time here.
We are.
The result of one Trump phone call was enough for an official impeachment inquiry. The result of one Trump phone call was enough to greenlight ethnic cleansing.
Yep.
Take away his damn phone.
Ooh, that's an idea. The thing is, he'll buy a burner phone because he doesn't care. Do you remember when Obama came into office and was told he couldn't use his BlackBerry, because he's had a BlackBerry.
BlackBerry was
right. Couldn't use his BlackBerry, couldn't do that. And he said, okay, because it's about national security. This grifter doesn't give a shit. Does
Grifty.
Not give a shit. about anything except his pocketbook.
And his lies, himself, his ego.
God.
Grifty McShifty.
And on that note, we're just about out of time. Gotta Laugh. Find her usually on the Twitters at Gotta Laugh, 2 T's, 2 F's, here on Tuesdays. And yeah, that's about it for today. Tomorrow, what are we doing tomorrow? Juliana Furlano is going to be here. You know, she works at WBAI in New York. And first they were canceled, and then they were back, and then they were canceled again. And now it looks like they're back again. We'll find out what the story is with WBAI in New York with Juliana Furlano. And we'll have more fun with the news, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Laffy, I'll see you later.
See you later. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye. And I'll see you back here tomorrow on the Nicole Sandler Show. Thank you for listening, everyone. Till next time. Bye.